And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
Welcome to another edition of the Awakening Podcast here on American Family Radio. I'm your host, of course, Bishop E.W. Jackson. Great to be with you. Folks, this program is being posted very close to the time it was recorded because the day before was Election Day in New York, New Jersey, and Virginia. And I intentionally waited for the results to come in before doing the program because I wanted to be as fresh as possible and as current as possible with exactly what happened. And of course, all of you know that from a Christian conservative point of view, it was, it was a disaster. The Democrats ran the table. And I said in prior programs, if you heard me, in fact, I was just on, I was just on with, just on hosting for, substituting for Abraham Hamilton III yesterday. And I said there were three possible scenarios. I said it could be a complete disaster and Democrats could sweep the whole thing. I said it could be a complete victory. Republicans could sweep the whole thing. Of course, that wasn't going to happen in New York. That's out of the question in New York because Sliwa wasn't going to win. But in Virginia and New Jersey, I said, or it could be a mixed bag. Well, it wasn't a mixed bag. And it certainly wasn't a victory for Republicans. Unfortunately, Democrats carried the day. Now, the first thing I want to deal with, and so I look, I'm not going to pretend to you that I'm not happy. I'm not happy, okay? I am not happy. But you and I as Christians have a different reason for being unhappy. You know, for people who are just dyed-in-the-wool Republicans or Democrats, for them, it is just another in the cycle of elections. You win some, you lose some. Okay, we lost this one. We'll come back next time. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, that for them, that's all it boils down to. And they've seen these cycles go round and round and round. For you and I, who are patriots, we are people who love our country deeply and passionately because we really believe that God gave us this great nation as a place of liberty and opportunity and prosperity and hope. We're affected, frankly, more deeply by this because we know what this portends for the future of our nation if the situation is not arrested, if it's not turned around. Because what it portends is disaster. That's what it portends for our country. It portends disaster. So let's go through this, through the numbers. First of all, you didn't have one socialist elected yesterday, and I don't know what happened in Minneapolis, but you didn't have one socialist elected yesterday. You had two. Because we had a lieutenant governor elected yesterday in Virginia, Hashmi, who is both like Mamdani, both a Islamist and a socialist. Now, she didn't campaign as a socialist per se, but that's really where she's coming from. That's really where she comes down. I mean, a leftist through and through. And of course, she was running against a very flawed candidate John Reed, who won the Republican nomination. He won the Republican nomination. John Reed won the Republican nomination, by the way, because he got on the ballot and no other candidate did. Getting on the ballot in Virginia is hard. I know. I did it three times. I did it three times. twice for U.S. Senate. I do it three times. I won't say three times, but maybe it's twice. I don't want to misstate the case. Yeah, because for lieutenant governor, I won the nomination in a convention for lieutenant governor. For U.S. Senate, both times I ran, I had to get on the ballot, which requires a statewide organizational effort. You've got to get at least 400 signatures from each district. You've got to get a total of 10,000 signatures, and they must all be certified, which means that instead of getting 400 signatures from each district, you need to get at least 600. Instead of getting 10,000 signatures, you need to get at least 12,500, 13,000, somewhere in there. That is a gargantuan organizational task, and you have a limited time to do it. And I did it the first time I ran statewide, and I did it the last time I ran statewide. And we had candidates, unfortunately, who didn't do it. And so I'm not here to blame them. I'm just telling you that those are the facts. And John Reed got it done. John Reed's a talk show host here in Virginia. I don't know whether he'll be back on his radio program, but he was a talk show host here in Virginia. He got it done. They didn't. And so he was on the ballot. They weren't. And he lost. Winsome Sears lost, unfortunately, by nearly 15%, folks. 15%. It looks like she won. Well, let's call it 14.25. So she won by 14.25%. She lost, I meant to say. Winsome Sears lost. Abigail Spanberger won by 14.25%. I mean, it was, for all practical purposes, a blowout, nearly 500,000 votes. It wasn't even close. Ghazala Hashmi won by 9 points. By 9 points. Nearly 400,000 votes. And this woman, Ghazala Hashmi, like I said, she's a piece of work. And Jay Jones, the guy who threatened to kill Todd Gilbert and his children, or fantasized about it. Believe it or not, he won by 200,000 votes against a sitting attorney general who had done a tremendous job. And I believe, frankly, I hadn't even checked on this, but I believe that we lost the Virginia House as well. The Senate was not up for grabs. The Senate race is not for another. The Senate race is not for another 2 years. It's not until 2027. But hold on, let me just double check here and see what happened. Okay. The Democrats picked up 64. The Democrats now hold 64 seats in the Virginia House of Delegates. 64 seats. Before the election, they had the House by 51 seats. They now have the House by 64 seats. And that's with one race still undecided. So, folks, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This was an unmitigated disaster for Virginia. And I would be lying to you if I didn't say I am deeply disappointed. Deeply disappointed, because I live here. And I know what this means coming down the pike. I know what these policies mean coming down the pike. I also know the potential it means for me personally, as someone who is against everything the Democrat Party represents, in terms of the potential for harassment, the potential for malicious prosecution, looking for something they can do, something they can find against me to shut me up. And I mean, I'm not the only one, obviously. I'm not making it sound as if, I don't want to make it sound as if, oh, I'm now the number one person they want to get. No, not at all. I certainly will not be the only one. but I am an outspoken opponent of everything the Democrat Party represents. And we know from the history of Jack Smith and what they've done to Donald Trump. Look, you all may not know about this or may not remember this, but let me give you a little bit of history to put this in perspective and to say how deep this goes. When I ran for lieutenant governor, I ran with Ken Cuccinelli and a state senator ran for attorney general. It'll come to me. Excuse me. We didn't really run as a team. So you know, if you think, well, how can you not know? We didn't run as a team. We ran as individuals because you have to earn your right on the ballot and you have to earn your place on the ballot individually. So, you know, the governor candidate doesn't get to pick his lieutenant governor running mate or anybody else. Everybody runs individually, and it was one of those races where I was under such vicious attack. I probably made more news than any other candidate, including the gubernatorial candidate, because the press was out to make sure that they destroyed me. They did not want me getting anywhere near the governorship, and so they made it a point to hammer away at me daily, and I am not exaggerating, folks, daily. As I said, one of the Silicon Valley big tech moguls wrote a $200,000 check for my opponent, then Ralph Northam, the guy who wouldn't even shake my hand after a debate, wouldn't even look at me after a debate on television. So we were running after a very successful governorship by Bob McDonnell. Bob McDonnell's a friend of mine, known him for a lot of years. But Jack Smith, the same Jack Smith who's gone after Donald Trump, the same Jack Smith went after Bob McDonnell, who at that point was being discussed as a potential vice presidential candidate and eventually a candidate for president, went after him, charged him, got him convicted, and his sentence was basically his sentencing, the implementation of his sentence was held up by his appeals, but basically was prepared to put him in prison for, I think, about 3.5 years. Bob McDonnell, a Christian man, continued to pray, continued to seek God. And like I said, I know him, and he is a man of prayer. He is a man of God. And appealed it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court held, this is unprecedented, the Supreme Court held 9-0 that Bob McDonnell should never have been charged with anything. Now just stop and digest that for a moment. The Supreme Court held 9-0 that Bob McDonnell should not have been charged with anything. He was completely and totally exonerated. And the stuff they'd accused him of was, you know, some one of his donors had taking his wife on a trip and lent the car to him. I mean, it was really petty stuff. And there was no indication of any quid pro quo, no indication that this particular donor, who was a friend of the family's, had somehow gotten something in return. Nothing. But it's just like with Donald Trump. They don't care that you've not done anything wrong or anything that's harmed anybody. What they care about is destroying you. So Bob McDonnell's political career, though, by that time, by the time he got exonerated, he was destroyed. He was politically gone. Now imagine, here we are running with the man who had been the most popular politician in Virginia, maybe one of the most popular in our history, sidelined under a horrible cloud of scandal. We can't be seen with him. He can't come to any of our events. He can't do any ads for us. And he can't raise any money for us. He's completely sidelined. And it turned out that the whole thing was bogus. No, but it wasn't bogus. It was exactly what they intended to do. They said, we're going to destroy him. We're going to get him off the board. And that way we got a better shot at destroying this little Republican movement that's going on in Virginia. And they did it. That was the last time, other than the last four years ago, and that's because of Terry McAuliffe's stupidity. I think if Terry McAuliffe had been a little smarter, we wouldn't have won 4 years ago. And that was with the governor, who is close to a billionaire, who spent tens of millions of dollars of his own money on the campaign. And that's the only time since I ran, and I ran in 2013, that's the only time since I ran that Republicans have won statewide. Now we've just lost all three constitutional offices, and the House is now held by Democrats to the tune of, went from 51 seats to 49 seats to now the Democrats hold 67 seats in the House. That is almost, well, actually, I think that may well be veto-proof. Of course, they don't hold, they don't have that many, that big a margin in the Senate. And I think it takes a Senate vote as well. But again, folks, this is how vicious they are. This is how dirty they are. This is the stuff that they will do to a human being. I mean, and I'm sure Bob would not mind me saying this, even though it's tragic to say, but they ripped his family apart over with these bogus charges. They ripped his family apart. I mean, I knew Bob McDonald's wife. I'm not even going to mention her name. But to my knowledge, they had a very happy marriage. Not after that. Because they basically divided the two of them. Okay, I don't know whether she was ultimately charged, but of course she wasn't really the target, even though a lot of the activity, in fact, frankly, all the activity swirled around what she was doing. You know, the wedding for her daughter, which she was involved in planning, and shopping trips, and you know, to because the McDonald's really didn't have money. They're not wealthy people. And so you're the governor. It costs you a lot of money, and you know the governor here in Virginia is not paid very much either, believe it or not. So they were just trying to get by, frankly. Not taking bribes, not changing policy because they were being paid to do so, nothing like that. But Jack Smith saw a shot, he saw an opportunity, and he went for the jugular. And he got his job done, even though he was made to look like a fool in the end. By that time, who cared? Because the career of one politician was destroyed, and the Republican prospects in Virginia were set back majorly, because if we had won that election, that would have changed the whole trajectory of Virginia. And if Bob McDonald had not been wounded, I really believe we would have won that election. With his help, I believe we would have won. It would have made all the difference in the world, because he would have been able to do two things. He would have been able to bring his goodwill to the election, and he would have been able to raise money for us. And I was struggling to raise money. I think I raised for my entire race about $1.3 million for the lieutenant governor's race, about $1.3 million, which is a pittance. My opponent, I think, raised three times that much. The George Soros and the Dems were just pouring it in. And I was struggling. And then I had Republican establishment people all over me because they thought I was, you know, the things I'd said in the past about homosexuality, which I still believe, by the way, that it is a societal sickness that will destroy cultures and destroy civilizations if you allow it to run rampant, which is what we're doing in our country with all the same-sex marriage and all this transgender craziness, you know, assault, having girls assaulted in their locker rooms and their bathrooms and their showers and all this crazy, I mean, and assaulted and insulted. I mean, this is Sodom and Gomorrah type stuff. And of course, they just hung that around my neck and appealed to every, and then of course, that's the outcome. So let me point out a couple things too that we need to be aware of, that we as Christians need to be praying about and need to be aware of. First is, apparently, women voted overwhelmingly Democrat. Men voted Republican, but not by as wide margins. Women voted Democrat by wide margins, and men didn't vote Republican enough to overcome that. They just couldn't do it. So that's part of what we have. The other thing is, and so, look, Republican strategists had better be sitting down talking about this. Now, here is the problem we've got. This is why I say most politicians are not leaders. Most politicians are bellwethers. They measure which way the wind is blowing and reflect that. And by the way, that's Republican and Democrat, most. There are exceptions, of course, but that's most. And it depends on the constituency that they're serving. But I'm convinced that women voted Democrat because of abortion, which I don't call abortion anymore. I call it baby killing. Because Democrats have brainwashed a sufficient number of women to believe that the most important thing in life is the ability to kill your own progeny, the ability to kill your unborn baby. That's the most important issue of life. They've convinced them of that. And no matter what else we do, we've got to make sure we're able to kill our unborn babies. Now, that's sick, but that's what the Democrats have, they've managed to do it. You know, the whole victimization mentality. Oh, you poor women, you poor women. Nobody should have to force you to have your baby. Well, nobody had to force you to have sex. If they didn't force you to have sex, and please, rape and incest, that is such an infinitesimal part of the abortion scheme that it is a red herring to even bring it up, frankly. It is a red herring to even bring it up. Well, what about minors? Look, it's terrible. It's tragic. But you don't make two wrongs don't make a right. You lock the person up who's committed statutory rape against a child, yes, but you don't murder the baby. You put that baby up for adoption. You put that child in foster care. I was in foster care. I mean, it's not the ideal, but it's better than death. I'd rather have spent those years I spent in foster care than have been killed as a baby in my mother's womb. So that means we have got a big education job to do. We have got to stop arguing at the margins and start talking about the natural inclination to protect one's own child. We got to stop talking about, well, is it 18 weeks? Is it 21 weeks? Is this? And start talking about the fact that that child is just like you and me. That child is a human being in the early stages of development, with a destiny and a plan and prospects for life, no matter what difficulties that child may be coming into. And we don't have the right to play God and snuff that child's life and snuff out that child's potential. We don't have the right to do that. And God's going to hold people accountable for that. You better believe God's going to hold people accountable for it. I mean, the word of God says, whoever offends one of these little ones that believe in me. Now, he's talking about children and talking about his own children, but I really believe that's a reference to the innocent, to the weak, to the those who can't defend themselves. He said it were better for them that a millstone were hanged about their neck and that they were drowned in the depths of the sea when offenses come. Well, you can't get any more offensive than killing an innocent unborn baby. People are going to answer to God to that. And those babies, I believe, are going to be standing there to bear witness to the people against the people who murdered them. And they're going to find out they were murdering human beings. They won't be able to deny it any longer. And we've got to somehow educate women on this. We've got to somehow get women delivered from this demonic stronghold that is in the lives of so many women. And that means we've got to be praying about this issue. Because it's going to take supernatural power. Because this is not a political opinion, folks. It's a spiritual stronghold. Satan has got his claws deep in the hearts of people who are convinced that this is just the be-all and end-all of life. I got to be able to kill my own unborn baby. Got to be able to do that. Or I'm not really free. I'm not really a woman. I'm not really in control. How about exercising control before entering into intimate relations with a man? How about that? How about that control? How about the control that God commands, which is don't have sex before marriage? How about that? Because if you don't have sex before marriage, then you don't need to kill your unborn baby, because your unborn baby is not going to be born out of wedlock. Your unborn baby is not going to be born to with a father who doesn't care about it, who's not interested in it, and wants to run away from it. See, if we would do things God's way, we wouldn't face these kind of moral dilemmas and be forced into these kind of moral monstrosities, because that's what that is, killing over a million unborn babies every year. I mean, that is, folks, that's blood running in the streets, as Hosea chapter 4 talks about, blood running in the streets. The old King James says, blood touches blood. So that's one thing, the women's vote. Here's the other thing that I'm going to come to Mom Donnie in a moment. But here's the other thing. The black vote voted 93% to 96% for Democrats. Those were the numbers in Virginia particularly. I mean, folks, that is staggering. And you can imagine it's particularly devastating in Virginia when you've got a black woman at the head of the ticket, which just goes to show, too, folks, all this racial identity stuff is a joke. It's a joke. Because the Democrat Party doesn't care about that. But it's a tool. And as Joe Biden said, this is the way Democrats think. This is the way Democrats of European ancestry think, or to put it more bluntly, the way white liberals think. If you're not a Democrat, you're not truly black. And so Winsome Sears isn't truly black because she's not a Democrat. So all this racial loyalty that is touted so much, which is, again, just a demonic lie, because there is no such thing. It doesn't exist. Because folks of the same so-called race will slit your throat when it's convenient for them. And that's exactly what the Democrat Party did to Winsome Sears, politically speaking. I mean, she went to a Norfolk State game and they booed her at the game. Booed her when she was introduced and booed her when she left. And this is one of the most accomplished black women in America. And you would think they would be rejoiced. Man, this is what the whole civil rights movement was about. We now have equality. We now have liberty. We can rise to the level. Our gifts and our talents will take us. Here's a woman who has achieved some wonderful things. Praise God. We applaud her achievements. Oh, no. She's a Republican, so she is the worst enemy in the world, apparently. Now, this stuff didn't just start, because I told you all, if you don't remember this, or maybe I've never said it while you were listening, but my wife and I were about to dedicate our youngest child, our youngest daughter, my baby girl, dedicate her to the Lord. We picked some grandparents who we thought were friends. Well, during that time we were planning for the dedication of our youngest daughter, my wife and I realized we were not Democrats and we were not going to be part of the Democrat Party, because we thought this is an affront to God to be a part of this abominable thing with all the killing of unborn babies and all the promotion of homosexuality and really treating government as God, the be-all and end-all. I didn't even have any idea how corrupt at that point the teachers' union was. But what my wife and I found out was that the laws in Massachusetts, where these Democrats are in control, you cannot opt out of a union, not a teachers union. They get to take your money whether you like it or not. And they get to contribute your money to all kinds of abominable, disgusting, degenerate, depraved things, whether you like it or not. Virginia may be about to lose our right to work status as a state because of what's happened in this last election. And all the right to work means, all it means is you can't be compelled to join a union. But you see, these Democrats who are always running around, President Trump is an authoritarian. President Trump is an authoritarian. He's a dictator. They'll be the first ones to tell you, you don't get to decide what's done with your money. We will, and we will take what we want and give it where we want, whether you like it or not. Now, who's authoritarian? I can't imagine agreeing with a law that takes the money of a liberal that they've worked for and they're entitled to, and I'm going to take that money and say, well, because I'm a conservative, I'm going to take that money and I'm going to have that money given to a conservative cause, whether they like it or not. I couldn't do that to people. Because to me, it's a violation of their autonomy, of their personal individual sovereignty, and the right to do what they want to do with their own resources. But Democrats have no problem with it because they are demonic. And you know, God gives you the choice. God says, now you can do evil, there are consequences, but I'm not going to force you otherwise. You can choose. Deuteronomy 30:19, I set before you, I call heaven and earth before you this day, that I set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Choose life. But God said, but the choice is yours, but you choose life that you and your seed, you and your descendants may live. Democrats don't believe in choice, except when it comes to the killing of an unborn baby. And even there, they don't believe in choice there. They want people to kill their unborn babies. They think it's a great thing. They think it's a thing to be celebrated, a thing to be lauded, a thing to be praised. And I'm not exaggerating, and you know I'm not exaggerating. That's the way they think of it. Shedding the innocent blood of an unborn baby is something that they think is to be exalted to the highest, which is no different to the pagans who offered their children up to Molech and Baal and slaughtered them on the altar with the same reason. This is going to make life better for us. Same reason. Different method, but same reason. Killing your unborn baby is to make life better for you. So, at any rate, the black vote is just, again, folks, I am not going to pretend to you that I am not profoundly disappointed, because for a couple reasons. One is, I have worked on these issues, and I've complained a little bit. I know you all don't see me as a complainer because I just don't live in that space, but I from time to time complained a little bit. I've said to Republican leaders, if you don't start investing some money in moving the black voters who share your Christian values into the Republican column by consistent and persistent outreach to them, you are going to continue to lose close elections, and maybe even elections like this, because you simply do not, in a close election, and Virginia potentially could have been close, if you're winning 90-95% of the black vote, which is what happened here, your goose is cooked. Unless you've got voting coming in from other directions that is just in very, very large numbers. Look at this. Abigail Spanberger won the black vote by 94.9%. This woman, Ghazala Hashmi, won the black vote by 95.7%. 95.7%. And Jay Jones won the black vote with 93.2%. That means barely, a little bit more than 1 in 100 black voters voted for the Republican. I mean, and by the way, in Virginia, probably a similar thing in New Jersey. In Virginia, 20% of the electorate is black. 20%, folks. But that is a gargantuan number. I think the last time I looked at that number, I think it was about 1.5 million. 1.5 million. You can't expect to win losing by those kinds of numbers. And yet, Republicans don't seem willing, capable, don't seem to have the vision to realize this is a long-term investment that must be made. Now, I've got a program called the King Douglas Forum to go into these inner city communities and begin to get these people rethinking how they're voting and the impact that their voting patterns are having on them, their families, their economies, the education of their children. And it's all negative. None of it's good. But Republicans clearly aren't making the case. And it's going to mean retooling because, look, when I ran for lieutenant governor, I have to admit, I didn't do as much campaigning in the black community as I should have. I did some, but not as much as I should have. But the whole Republican apparatus and framework is just not set up for it, whereas the Democrats, because of all the benefits and all the control of the welfare system and all this stuff, the Democrats have a machine. It's like the Tammany Hall machine. They can go to these senior citizens, they can go to these projects, and they can round people up and say, hey, you want your benefits to continue, you got to get out here and vote for us. We'll send the buses to get you, and we'll tell you how to vote. Just vote a straight Democrat ticket. And that's exactly what they did. So Abigail Spanberger beats Winsome Sears by over 14 points. Over 14 points. I said 500,000 votes. 500,000 votes. So she got, Abigail Spanberger, let's just round it up, say she got nearly 2 million votes. And Winston Sears got 1.5 million votes, okay? And Abigail Spanberger got nearly 2 million votes. Now, 20% of the vote, one in every five voters in Virginia is black. That means she got about 19%. She got about 19 percentage points of that 20% that are black voters. She got about 19% of those. And Winston Sears got about 1%. Well, 2, 3, 4, 5. You realize the impact of that on the numbers? I mean, I think we've got about 8 million people, and I think we've got about 1.5 million black voters in Virginia. And if you've got 90, let's say half of them, 750,000 of them vote, and you've got 95% of that 750,000 voting for Abigail Spanberger, and that number might be a little high, but let's just use it for the moment. So please don't hold me to that exact number. But just imagine. I mean, that means you've got, of that 750,000, if that were the number, you've got 700,000 of those voters voting for Abigail Spanberger. Well, there's more than a margin of victory right there. I mean, that alone. But let's say you've got half of those people registered, and then half of those registered voting. Still, you got 375,000 voters. And if you've got, of that 375,000, you've got 350,000, which is entirely with the levels of voting. You've got 350,000 voting for Abigail Spanberger. I mean, given the margin she got from women and the margin she got from the black community, there's your blowout right there. I mean, you do need some additional votes, obviously, to win assuming that, you know, I'm just using, as again, as a round number, say 370,000, I halved it. But if you're getting 350, that 370,000, 375,000 voters, my goodness, that gets Abigail Spanberger almost to her win right there, or at least the 500,000. She didn't need that many to win, by the way. But there's her victory right there. I mean, she won by a lot more votes than she needed to win. I mean, she's got over 57% of the vote. She only needed 50.1. But you see what I'm saying? At some point, conservatives are going to have to realize these values that we share, particularly with the church-going element of the black community, we're going to have to go in there and win these voters. Now, I've got a plan for doing that, but as I've said many times to Republicans, but you've got to be prepared to spend money to do that. Yeah, how much money? I mean, they, George Soros and a few others, gave Stacey Abrams $14 million to turn Georgia. And you know what we've got in Georgia right now, right? Two Democrat senators in Georgia, which one would consider to be one of the most conservative states in the union. Not anymore. Georgia is now purplish. I don't know why it is that Democrats are prepared. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I know why it is. Because they worship power and we don't. That's why. They worship it. They fall at its altar, salivating over the prospects of having control over everything and everybody. That's why they're machine politicians, because they use the power of government to get control of people, to make them dependent, to get them to do their bidding. You know, conservatives can't do that because we're not interested in being slave masters. Democrats are. They still long to be slave masters. Yeah, I said it because it's the truth. Democrats still long to be slave masters. But now instead of using a plantation, they use a welfare check or other benefits. DEI, affirmative action, whatever special treatment they can conjure up to let you know, as long as you stay on this particular plantation, you will be fed, you will be clothed, you will be taken care of. Now, you might lose your human dignity in the process, but that's okay. Who cares? At least you will have what you need for, at the very minimum, a subsistence living. As long as you get out and cast your ballot for the D, we will take care of you. It's a very sad situation. One of these days, I'm going to share with you my vision for what needs to happen. And I've got a lot of stuff. But folks, it costs money. It costs money to do this, and particularly to do it and to be consistent and persistent at it. In other words, you can't just go into the black community and say, hey, you know, conservative values are better for you. Okay, see you in 4 years. I mean, You got to have a plan and a program for educating people. And remember how difficult this is and why it requires a lot of money. I mean, it would require a lot of money even in a neutral, normal circumstance. But you got a circumstance in which the colleges, universities, journalism, entertainment, the folks on the streets are all going to be pounding away at you and telling you, we got to vote Democrat. We got to vote Democrat. We got to vote Democrat. But Democrat and black are virtually the same. I mean, I guarantee you most black folks don't know that the Democrat Party was the party of slavery, the party of segregation, the party of the Ku Klux Klan. Most black people don't know that Woodrow Wilson resegregated the federal government, resurrected the Ku Klux Klan, had a horrible, horrible view of black folks. Most people don't know that Lyndon Johnson regularly used the N-word, and the Great Society program was designed designed to buy the loyalty of the black community with a very dehumanizing view that you just give them some goodies and they'll stick with us. You got to have the goodies for them, though. You know, basically infantilizing children, infantilizing black folks, treating them like children. So now let me end with this because I'm almost out of time. I've just given you the realities of this, what's happened here. New York obviously is completely off the charts because Mamdani is both a socialist and an Islamist. You know, he gave some of his speech in Arabic and all of that. And, you know, and some of the things he said about Trump. I mean, this man has no class. He has no sense of graciousness. Why would he? Why would he? He comes from a militant religion that believes in spreading its influence with the sword. So why would he show any graciousness? In fact, he's a straight-up demagogue. He began by invoking Eugene Debs. You all know who Eugene Debs is, right? He's the first socialist to run for president of the United States. I think he ran the first time while he was in prison in 1920 and ran several times after that. But he talked about, listen to this, he talked about the bodega owners and the Mexican abuelos and the Senegalese taxi drivers and the Uzbek nurses and the Trinidadian cooks and the Ethiopian aunties. You know, as if you're not truly a New Yorker unless you come from one of these countries, these non-European countries. I mean, if you're a citizen and you come from one of these countries, I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, we have citizens who come from Great Britain and Ireland and Spain and Italy as well. But he was racializing the whole thing. Because that's where he knows, like all Democrats, that's how you manipulate people. That's how you control them. You appeal to with racial demagoguery. And that's what he did. He talked about what he's going to do for immigrants and trans women and black women. I'm thinking, think about all the people he's left out. Left out men. Okay. Left out normal people with abnormal sexuality. Left them out. Quoted Jawaharlal Nehru, the first prime minister of independent India. In other words, he didn't quote Thomas Jefferson. He didn't quote George Washington. He didn't quote the founding fathers. He quoted a foreign leader. Jawaharlal Nehru, the first prime minister of India after its independence. And to me, it was a speech of racial demagoguery when you come right down to it. He talked about, we're going to bring an end to Islamophobia. Oh, brother. Yeah, that's the big problem in our country, Islamophobia. Ooh, we got to bring an end to that because, after all, Muslims are under such terrible attack and horrible things. You know who's under attack? People in the inner city by criminals. I mean, Islamophobia, give me a break. I'm not afraid of Islam. I don't think most Americans are. We don't like it. We don't agree with it. But we respect the right of our fellow citizens to worship as they see fit because we believe in our constitutional republic. And as long as they're not interested in doing violence and doing damage and destroying our country, our culture, they're welcome to worship as they see fit. But we are also free to disagree. Had the nerve to call Donald Trump a despot. Yeah, we'll find out who the despot is. I know who the despotism party is, the Democrats. They're going to hold landlords. He said, we're going to hold landlords to account. We're gonna stop business owners from extorting their workers. So now when you hire somebody and you pay them for a day's wages or a week's wages or whatever, you are extorting from them, and apparently. See, this is a guy who does not believe in private property. And he said, you know, New York City is now led by an immigrant. Notice this, not by an American. I don't think he ever once in the speech referred to America or Americans. I mean, think about that. And I listened to the whole speech. Now, I may have missed something, but I cannot remember him not one time referring to America or referring to Americans. Or referring to himself even as an American. He's an immigrant. And he says, this is to Donald Trump, to get to any of us, you'll have to get through all of us. So now what? I guess it's what he calls immigrants. I call invaders. It's them against us, I guess. That was the nature of the speech. I tell you, folks, it's tragic. It really is. But again, this is part of a long brainwashing process. And I told you all, Columbia, maybe I mentioned this to you, but I've certainly mentioned it. The majority of students at Columbia University are not Americans. The majority of students at Columbia University are foreigners. The percentage is a little bit lower at Harvard, but it's very significant. I think it's about a third. I think it's about a quarter at Harvard. But the majority of students at Columbia are foreigners. They are not Americans. So here we go. Look, I said from the very beginning, just because Donald Trump got elected doesn't mean we've won this war. It's not nearly over. And the outcome of this election is proof positive of that. Pray for us here in Virginia, because I know there'll be a lot of people in Virginia who have the ability and the willingness who are going to leave. You know, one of the things that saddens me here is that my wife and I left Massachusetts because we absolutely despised all these leftist, crazy, ridiculous policies. And I mean, they were pushing them hard. They were 15 years ahead of everybody else on homosexuality and making everybody bend to their will. Now I'm in Virginia and I got the same thing. My ancestral home, though. I didn't have and Massachusetts was just where I was sent there by the Marine Corps. I had no particular affinity for Massachusetts. I had two children born there and loved my children, but that didn't make me love Boston or love Massachusetts. But I have an affinity for Virginia. I love the legacy of the founding fathers that Virginia represents. And I'm watching it being destroyed right before my very eyes. But I will say this. I've said before, just because Donald Trump got elected doesn't mean we should now quit, fold up our tent and go home. And now that this has happened in Virginia, this utter political disaster has happened in Virginia, I'm not about to fold up my tent and go home. I don't care what they think. I don't care what they say. I don't care what they do to me. I am not going to stop fighting. Now I'm going to fight the good fight of faith. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. Unlike Jay Jones, which just goes to show where they're coming from, you reward Jay Jones for having threatened a man and his children. You reward him for that. See, I'm never going to threaten anybody, certainly least of all their children. I'm going to pray for even the people with whom I disagree. I pray for Jay Jones. I pray for this new ticket. I pray that they'll get a revelation. I pray that they'll get saved. I pray that their hearts will be turned to Jesus. I do. I pray that. I want God to move mightily on these people because I don't hate them. So when I talk about fighting, I'm not talking about fighting violently. I'm talking about fighting the good fight of faith. As the weapons of our warfare are mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And who knows that God will not use this to turn the tide in Virginia in a way that becomes irreversible and Virginia becomes more like Arkansas or like Tennessee. It is a thing devoutly to be prayed for, devoutly to be wished, and let's join together and believe God for it. Not only in honor of God Almighty who gave us this wonderful nation and used Virginia to help form it, but in honor of our founding fathers from Virginia who pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor in order to give us this nation. Well, if they were willing to do that, to establish America, we have to be willing to do that to preserve America. And that's what I am absolutely committed to doing. So God bless each and every one of you. Be encouraged, because even though I'm not happy, I'm disappointed, believe me. But nevertheless, like David, I'm encouraging myself in the Lord. Okay? Because I will bless the Lord at all times. His praises shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make its boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear of it and be glad. So magnify the Lord with me and let us exalt his name together. I don't care what the circumstances are. And David was running from Saul, who was committed to killing him when he wrote that song. So that means you and I have got to continue to do what I've urged every single time I have an opportunity to communicate with you. Stand up, step up, speak up, and refuse to back up. Because we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Not ultimately. Because we are on God's side, and Jesus has already won the victory. God bless everybody.